This is Points of Departure from KUAF Public Radio and Arkansas Global Changemakers.
Welcome to a very special episode of the Points of Departure podcast. My name is Lawrence Hare, and joining me as always is my colleague, Dr. Rogelio Garcia Contreras. Hello, Rogelio.
Lawrence, how are you?
Doing well. We are here because events have overtaken us in a manner of speaking, and one of our friends of the program is now making international news. And so we have an opportunity to share some of his perspectives and connections to Arkansas. Okay. So there's been a lot of news lately about the South Asian nation of Bangladesh. Over the past summer, student protesters have been active in the streets, protesting mainly flagging economic conditions, but also new government schemes that are imposing quotas on valued government positions that are leading to accusations of cronyism and nepotism on the part of the Bangladeshi Prime Minister, Sheikh Hasina. On Monday, August 5th, Hasina fled her residence as protesters drew near and went into exile. The Bangladeshi military has seized power and is now in the process of establishing a caretaker government. This is where we come in. It so happens that position of interim leader, at the behest of the student protest leaders themselves, is now falling upon the shoulders of Muhammad Yunus, an 84-year-old economist who studied at Vanderbilt University and became world famous as a founder of microfinance policies and is also a beloved figure and a Nobel Peace Prize winner in 2006. We've had several opportunities in our program to interact with Muhammad Yunus, and Rogelio, you know him perhaps even better than I. Maybe you can speak to your connection.
Yes, I had the opportunity to meet Dr. Yunus back in 2010, I believe, in one of the microcredit summit campaigns in Valladolid, Spain. And then I have had the opportunity to meet him several times again throughout all these years for different instances in relation to the work that we have done. And you and I met with him before the pandemic
in Berlin
at a conference in Berlin, all related to his work in microlending, microcredit, which, of course, you know, granted him the Nobel Peace Prize, but also has been the focus of a lot of criticism.
So Yunus is the founder of Grameen Bank, and he's a beloved figure in Bangladesh precisely because of his efforts through microfinance. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what that is and why that is so important for a nation like Bangladesh, 171 million residents fighting long-term endemic poverty.
So Dr. Yunus essentially had a revolutionary idea, and this idea was to make the poorest of the poor having access to lines of credit. In this world, in the financial system that we live in, you need to have money in order to access credit. But he is a firm believer that everyone is an entrepreneur. Everyone has the capacity to generate income on their own, but they need capital. And flipping the financial model upside down requires the access to capital without the collateral, without the guarantee that people could pay. I mean, if you're poor, you don't have any guarantees. You don't have any collaterals. And he was lending money without these collaterals. And this, in this sense, is very revolutionary.
He's taking risks where other banks just wouldn't take these
exactly,
risks.
Exactly, because banks see this as a highly risky operation, and therefore they don't even serve this population, right? Muhammad Yunus thought that this was upside down, and therefore we would never be able to overcome this extreme poverty because these individuals would not have access to this capital. That's microlending. That's how he started Grameen Bank, the village bank, right? And is the concept is essentially to providing these small loans to the poorest of the poor. And instead of asking them for collateral, is kind of a peer support system. Now, the model has been replicated by many, including commercial banks around the world.
In Arkansas as well.
In Arkansas as well. And this is what brought Muhammad Yunus to Arkansas for the first time during the Clinton administration when he was governor of Arkansas, but also, you know, many different times in his role as a leader in microlending around the world. But the problem with microlending is that many of these banks have replicated the model, not exactly in, you know, following exactly the recipe that Yunus was originally proposing. There are two aspects in Yunus's model that really work. One is this democratization of the risk, so to speak, where everybody is responsible for a collective loan. And the other one is the education and the purpose on how to invest that loan, right? Because this is a loan that is supposed to be productive, that is supposed to be become an investment to start a business, right? This is not a loan that is supposed to grant purchasing power to the person that receives it. And for that, you need to do a lot of work with the group. So when banks were replicating these, they were, in order to reduce costs, right, they were skipping that step because it's a very costly operation, right? It's not only going to the villages and, you know, providing these women loans where banks don't exist, or creating systems where through a phone you receive the money that you need to launch a business or whatever, but it's also the training, the support system. And you have to be present in these villages. And it's a very costful operation that banks were skipping. And then banks were granting loans because Yunus and his experience in Grameen Bank discovered something, that the default rate was in the 90, you know, in the 6-7%, right? So 92%, 93%, 94% of those recipients of those that were receiving the loans were paying them back.
And that has to mean that they're successful in their enterprise.
They are successful in their enterprise, or they are very responsible. You know, these, mm-hmm. these are individuals that are responsible for the loans that they receive. There's a lot of honor going on. There's a lot of pride that is attached to these loans. But when you skip the aspect of this loan must be an investment that is supposed to generate some sort of revenue stream, some income for the families that are recipients of these loans. And when you receive cash flow for which you are not prepared on how to make an investment with it, then you may get into this vicious cycle of loan after loan, like a debt in your credit card, right? And then all of a sudden, instead of taking you out of poverty, you are more into debt, and it's very difficult to break this cycle. So many were replicating the model, but skipping that educational part because they were attracted by the low default rates. This is where microlending became controversial. And this is where many started arguing that the model didn't work. But I am among those that believe that the model works for as long as you don't skip the steps.
And we've had conversations with with other guests, such as Richard Chungo in Malawi, were making this this same type of investment coupled with a social mission that exactly. seems to be paying dividends. And certainly for Muhammad Yunus, the efforts of Grameen Bank made him a beloved national hero in Bangladesh.
Absolutely.
It also...
And not only in Bangladesh, in many parts around the world. Yeah, I mean, Opportunity yes. International, yeah, where Richard Chungo works, you know, in Malawi, is an example of this. Yes.
That's right. It also made him a political target for Sheikh Hasina. And in recent years, she was prosecuting him for allegations of corruption, in part because the interest rates that Grameen Bank runs are higher as a way to offset risk. And there were accusations that that was leading to corruption. But many world leaders, including at the United Nations, were arguing that these were politically motivated attacks. And of course, the student protesters seem to have seen it that way. And now they have asked Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize laureate, to take the reins of government in Bangladesh. Well, it so happens that before all of this unpleasantness developed, we had an opportunity to sit down with Muhammad Yunus by Zoom, along with an audience of students and spectators from around the world, and we discussed his work in microfinance, and more particularly, we discussed his connections to Arkansas, which run surprisingly deep. And so, given the developments of this week, we thought it would be an interesting session to draw a little bit of that audio and share with you his thoughts on how to change the world. And by the way, if you want to know more about Muhammad Yunus's work, you can also read his book, which is called A World of Three Zeros.
And as you're listening to this conversation that we had with Dr. Yunus, right after, or at the peak of the pandemic, right, Lawrence? I mean, I think this was...
It was right as we were coming off the pandemic, and Yunus was reflecting a little bit about how the pandemic was creating an opportunity
correct.
For a reset.
Yes, an opportunity for reset and an opportunity for change the trajectory of our economic model and the way in which we are making decisions about our day-to-day lives. I think it's a very interesting conversation in that sense. He made reference to climate change. He made reference to extreme poverty, inequality, access to opportunity. But also in the context of the pandemic, I think one of the aspects that he was emphasizing is how it is imperative that we realize that the solution doesn't come from great political decisions and, you know, someone at the top just making these decisions, but how each one of us can play a role in the day-to-day transformation of the course of things.
It'll be very interesting to think about the ways that he talks about the urgency of the moment, his approach to change, and then how we can expect him to act as a leader now that he's on the international stage.
Yes, and something that we were very much interested was the connection with Arkansas, right? And this connection with Arkansas had to do with the role that he played in the creation of what today is Southern Bancorp, which is, was an attempt to replicate his Grameen Bank approach in Bangladesh. And another example on how this idea doesn't necessarily have to be replicated exactly in the way it is, but it's a model that can be used, customized to the realities and circumstances of different places around the world.
You're listening to Points of Departure. That conversation with Muhammad Yunus is up next after this break.
Summers on the Ozarks, I love to kayak on the beautiful White River in Carroll County. And while driving to the river in my truck, I listen to Weekend Edition on KUAF to hear headline news, as well as feature stories from around the globe. I'm Jacqueline Froelich, news producer for KUAF. Please make a contribution to your public radio station at supportkuaf.com. Thanks.
You're listening to Points of Departure, a podcast production of KUAF Public Radio and Arkansas Global Changemakers. We now have that conversation from 2021 with Muhammad Yunus. A note, this audio is from a Zoom call, so there may be a few glitches and low spots. Thanks for bearing with us. Now, that conversation.
Dr. Yunus, welcome. Welcome to the University of Arkansas. It is a privilege to have you here with us today. I think I speak for everyone present in this call when I say I feel extremely fortunate to have the opportunity to share this moment with you. I leave you now with my dear colleague and fellow Arkansas Global Changemakers co-founder, Dr. Lawrence Hare.
Thank you, Rogelio, and thank you, Dr. Yunus, for joining us. To our colleagues in the United States, good morning, and to you and your colleagues in Bangladesh, good evening. We'll be reflecting today on more than four decades of transformative work in the fields of economics and finance and applications that have literally lifted millions out of poverty around the world. And so we have been excited for a long time to organize an event and welcome you to Arkansas. But I must remind everyone, of course, that this is not your first time to Arkansas, either physically or virtually. And I wondered, as an opening question, if you wouldn't mind telling a little bit about how you came to be connected with the Clintons and how you came to be here doing your work in the United States in the state of Arkansas.
Well, thank you. First of all, I want to say that I'm so grateful to you for inviting me to this event at Arkansas, because Arkansas has become an integral part of my life. It's not just a visit. I've been very intensely involved with Arkansas, and because of my work there. And it began, as you mentioned, about Bill Clinton. He became governor, young governor, very young governor at that time. Somehow he came to know about Grameen Bank through a common friend. And he invited me to come to Arkansas, start Grameen Bank there. So I said, well, when I come to the USA, I'll definitely visit. I didn't want to rush right away. So I said, I will come. And I did came and visited him in Arkansas. And I went to Little Rock, of course, meeting him, his staff, and so on. The idea came that he wants to create a Grameen Bank there. And that part was played by South Shore Bank, Ron Grzynski, if you remember him. Bill Clinton, as a governor, invited him to bring the work of South Shore Bank in Chicago to Arkansas. So he worked with the Arkadelphia, Bank of Arkadelphia. So he said, we can work through this to create Grameen Bank. So that's what the program, and I came to Arkansas, started going visiting. I said, I must see what it is because I work in Bangladesh, which is a completely different kind of country. Everybody said, it's America, it will never work. I want to see, do you have poor people? So they said, yeah, we have lots of poor people, and explained all that. Then they show me poor people who were running a gas station, who were a radio station. I said, no, these are not poor people I'm talking about. I'm talking about people who have nothing, absolutely nothing to do, nothing for their life, no livelihood. And they couldn't find a way to do that. I said, do you have a welfare program? Do you have a list of the people who receive welfare? They said, of course, we have lots of people on welfare list. I said, show me the list and take me to those people. And my journey began. And I started seeing people as how terrible the situation was at that time. And people lost their income because some garment factory moved away. They have no job anymore. They are sitting there with the welfare benefits and so on and so forth. So I started talking to them. That took me to many, many, many places that I went from. Of course, Arkadelphia is one I had to go. And Pine Bluff, I had to go because Pine Bluff became our headquarters for our program. So I spent a lot of time in Pine Bluff and Fayetteville and many tiny little places with 500 people, with 1,000 people living there and so on. So I saw the reality of the situation. I said it will work wonderfully because I negotiated with them, talked to them how to do that. And always Ron Grzynski from South Shore Bank and the staff of Bill Clinton, always with there. Hillary Clinton was very much interested in it. Finally, a program was created called Good Faith Fund. So that was the beginning of our work in there. And they were very proud of the program, and Bank of Arkadelphia was financing it, and we continue to do that. So that was the beginning of Grameen Bank coming out of Bangladesh, going not only to another country, but the richest country in the world. So we said, look, the banks don't care for those people, so we have to create an alternative bank. That's what the Grameen Bank is. And we created the alternative bank. And they were so impressed, South Shore Bank was so impressed by doing what they were doing in Arkadelphia and Pine Bluff and all other little places that we were working. They wanted to bring it to Chicago. So another program began in Chicago, in the Chicago neighborhoods and so on, poor neighborhoods. So this is what my first experience is. It's so deeply rooted in my experience that I see this is part of my life that I would like to go back and visit. I'm very happy that your university has created the Social Business Center. I'm happy that we could be present there in some form and work there in the same way that we have done, the beginning was done. Later on, of course, Bill Clinton wanted to become president, and he ran for it, and he kept saying that if I'm elected president, I'll replicate the experience in Arkansas in all over the United States and create Grameen program all over the United States. And the journalists chased him. What is this Grameen Bank? What do you do? What does it mean? How do you bring something in Bangladesh, the poorest country in the world, some experience of poorest country in the world to come to the richest country in the world? So they kind of thought this is a crazy idea that he's promoting. So he had to always defend it and continue repeating what I have been doing. He has to mention my name. So my name became integrated in the whole campaign, election campaign and so on. So that is a long history, and the relationship that was built with Bill Clinton and the family remain ever since very close, and many other things happened because of that.
Yes, thank you. Certainly the idea that you brought to Arkansas has been an inspiration for the Arkansas Global Changemakers Initiative. Like you, we believe that these exchanges across national and cultural boundaries can be very fruitful in approaching these global challenges we face today from a local or regional perspective. And with that in mind, we have asked a few of our students and colleagues to pose a few questions to you, if you don't mind. And I'd like to start from one of our students in the Net Impact Program, Gershagun Kandola. And if I can ask her to come into the spotlight, as it were, and to pose her question.
Hello, Dr. Yunus. It's a pleasure to meet you here virtually. So my question is that, of course, when you started Grameen Bank back in 1983, right, the world was a different place then. And that's not just true for Bangladesh, but the entire world, including developing and developed countries. How do you think, given the current uncertain times, especially because of COVID-19 pandemic, how do the principles of microfinance apply now? And do they have to be modified, adapted to see to kind of suit the current situation? And how can that be used in fact to create a more just and equitable world today?
Thank you. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that the world is a very different place than what it used to be when I was studying in Bangladesh back in 1976 and on. When you say it's a different, some people may think we are talking about much better world than what it used to be. But that's not how I heard it. I thought it's a much worse world than what it used to be. Because at that time, global warming was not as bad as this, what we have right now. Now we are on notice. The world has got a notice that we don't have much time left. So we today, human beings are the most endangered species on this planet. In 1971, it was not. It was still very happy world in that sense of global warming. It's not going to end. We have lots of poverty at that time, lots of people suffering from that, but not in the way that the whole world will collapse. Today we live in a burning house. Today we have big celebration going on under the roof, a burning roof, and soon it will engulf, the fire will engulf the whole house. But we are ignoring it, and that's the most dangerous part of it. We are not concerned, we are not worried, we are not terrified that the house isn't burning. Today, the wealth concentration is getting so bad. 1% of the population of the world owns 99% of the wealth of the world. 1% owning 99% of the world. So the 99% of the people own only 1% of the world, and it's getting worse. And it's a ticking time bomb. It can explode anytime. And the last one, and there's a long list of what we have done wrong. The last one is a massive intrusion of artificial intelligence coming, and we are kind of celebrating its entry. But that's the most dangerous thing is happening, because it will massively dislodge human being from the work, and it will continue to do that in a it will be speedier and speedier as we go along. So we are in the direction where human beings will become sort of a garbage on this planet. They have no use for anybody, because artificial intelligence has taken it over. What pandemic has done, pandemic has stopped that economic machine. So the train, which was a fast train that we are riding to our disaster, final end, that train has been stopped. That's a good news. COVID is a bad news, but this is a good news. COVID has stopped the machine, has stopped the train, which was taking us to the top. So I'm raising the question, now the train is stopped, it has created an opportunity for us. So that we don't have to go back to the train again. We can get off the train and build another train to go another direction, not in the debt direction. That's where our task comes in the universities. That's where we are trying to say through the UNIS Social Business Center, explaining how do we get to that world. And we define that new world by saying it will be a world of three zeros. Zero net carbon emission, we have to make it, and we can do it. It's a known thing. Simply, we don't want to do that. We got used to it. So we know what the global warming is happening, and I'm contributing to it, but I don't stop. I know that it's bad, but I don't stop. We have to stop. Otherwise, your next generation will not be here. And that's why the next generation people, the teenagers, are marching on the street, calling themselves Fridays for Future, and blaming their parents that you have stolen our future.
That's an interesting thing you said, Dr. Yunus, to sort of the idea that we expect that things are going to be better today. And in fact, maybe it's a worse world than it was in the past. And so it sort of challenges this assumption about progress, right? That progress is not something we can take for granted. So this spring, we've been working with the Honors College here at the university to run a signature seminar with students where we're discussing exactly these issues. I'd like to invite one of the students from that seminar, Lauren Campbell, to come into the spotlight, and she has a question for you that's very closely related to what you were just discussing. Lauren.
Hi, Dr. Yunus. In your book, A World of Three Zeros, you note that to address the problems of wealth inequality, we need to reframe the system to move away from one that is, quote, purely personal interest to a system in which both personal and collective interests are emphasized. How do we go about changing this mindset in cultures, particularly in the U.S.?
Yes, everywhere. So not only in the U.S., everywhere. You see, those concepts that what is a business, what is the goal of a business, all these are taught in schools. You start from your elementary schools and you go down the line, you keep learning all these things. And in the meantime, your brain is kind of infected with all these ideas that this is what the business is, this is what you're supposed to be doing. And when you finish school, you have to have a job and get ready for a job. If you don't get a job, you're a useless person. These are all wrong ideas completely. Suppose we teach the students as they come in, as you grow up, you can be an entrepreneur. Human beings are born as entrepreneurs. So you are an entrepreneur. I said, all human beings are packed with unlimited creative capacity. That's the nature of a human being. Whether a child is born in the street or a child is born in the palace of a king, but the circumstances will make it completely different. So how to make sure that you discover yourself, your own worth? And that's what the schooling system, education system is supposed to be. So turning you into the direction that you have that make it happen. Economists told us that all human beings are driven by self-interest. That's the point you raised from my book. I said, who said so? Why all human beings have to be driven by self-interest? What happened to the common interest? Who looks after the common interest? Since economists thought about only self-interest, they created a business of self-interest. How to make yourself rich. They have no other concern, just to make yourself rich. And becoming rich is the success. That's the definition of their success. I said, why? This is, again, you are turning away a human being from the right path. All you have to do is say, no, you have the self-interest, also the common interest. You have a business to self-interest. If you want to make yourself rich, you follow that. But if you have also want to do things to solve the problem of environment, problem of water, problem of healthcare, problem, all the problems that you know, you can create a business. And that's the kind of business we created. We call it social business. Microcredit was born as a social business. It remains as a social business. We don't want to make money out of microcredit. And the people who are now very active in the microcredit world, they are, again, bankers who want to make money out of it. So I said, why don't you tell young people that you have both? Decide what you want. I'm not imposing anything. I'm just giving an option. And the moment you introduce that idea, suddenly the world becomes completely different world. And then we can address all the problems we created, now start solving, because we don't want to pollute the world, make this an unlivable environment. We want to protect them because that's our social business. We create social business to keep the forest, build forests rather than burn forests. We burn forests because we have to grow soybean, because we have to grow cattle, because we have to sell steaks. And see, this is the cycle here. So we are not protecting anything, we are destroying things. So this is the destruction part. So this is what we have to do, that how to start this process of thinking, learning. You said, how do we do that? Start in the same. That's why the UNIS Social Business Center that you created in your university is important. That this is the one who will be explaining what are the other kind of things that you can think about. It's up to you to judge. Nobody's saying that you have to follow this path. This is not a religion. It's a kind of thinking process. You think this, which one is good for you? And many young people are coming forward, creating those social businesses, and an enormous amount of creativity is coming out of it. So this is how the turning point is. You have to first say that we are at a risk of our life. This system will be killing us, destroying us. We have to build a new civilization. This old civilization is up for destruction, it will destroy itself. So before it destroys itself and destroys us, we have to build a new civilization. That's the civilization which will start with the socialist businesses and other things, that you want to build things rather than destroy things, those ideas. And you have your values will be different in that one. Thank you.
You've been listening to our conversation with Muhammad Yunus, 2006 Nobel Peace Prize laureate, and now interim leader of Bangladesh, who in 2021 spoke with the Arkansas Global Changemakers team. You've been listening to Points of Departure. Thanks for listening.
Points of Departure is a podcast production of KUAF Public Radio and Arkansas Global Changemakers. Your hosts are Lawrence Hare and Rogelio Garcia Contreras. I'm producer Daniel Carruth. For more on this and to listen to previous episodes of Points of Departure, you can go online to KUAF.com.